Paul finished his lesson this morning. The last verse of 1 John says, little children, keep yourself from idols. And then in doing so, he pulled back a statement based off of, probably had a lot to do with idolatries, because John's ministry was so much connected with the city of Ephesus. And Ephesus was known as a hub of idolatry. And so that's what got me thinking, well, I just want to give this lesson. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. And this story, I had a lesson on this years and years ago, and it's one that I've always liked because it's so visual. And so I think you're going to, if you're not really familiar with the story, when you leave this afternoon, you're going to have a picture of at least what it was like back in those days when the Apostle Paul was at the city of Ephesus and got caught up in a big-time mob and riot scene all about Diana of the Ephesians. So we're going to look at Acts, the 19th chapter, and that's where we'll spend our time. So after prayer, if you want to have your Bible, turn to Acts 19. That's where we'll spend our time. Verse 28, as the text says, now when they had heard this, they were full of wrath and cried out, saying, great is Diana of the Ephesians. And get ready for that phrase, because you're going to hear it over and over and over again. Not quite as many times as the Christians heard that day, but you're going to hear that quote, great is Diana of the Ephesians. Before we go further, though, let's go to God in the Word of Prayer. Well, let's just begin with kind of a semantics lesson. I don't know which version of the Bible you have in your hand. I have the New King James Version. It says, great is Diana. Sometimes you'll come across the name Artemis as well. And just for clarification, it's talking about the same goddess. It's just if you're talking Greek or Roman. Artemis, it says, in Greek religion, was the goddess of wild animals, the hunt, vegetation, and chastity and childbirth. And she was identified by the Romans with Diana. So Artemis was the daughter of Zeus and Leto and the twin sister of Apollo. And so if you go back to those old mythologies, you had the Greeks came first and then the Romans. And a lot of times they just changed the names, kept the gods and the goddesses the same. Like right here, it says Zeus. Zeus is Roman. Zeus corresponds with Jupiter in Greek mythology. And so they normally had two names. It's basically the same. It's normally the same with god and goddess. So Artemis is Greek. And Diana is just the Roman name. And so since it was under Roman times, now they say a great is Diana of the Ephesians. But you may sometimes see Artemis. It's not a different story. So we're going to pick up in Acts the 19th chapter, verse 23. It says, about that time there arose a great commotion about the way. And first of all, I just want to stop. I love the way that they just call Christianity the way. I just think that's pretty neat. And that pretty much tells you everything you need to know. It's the way. But it says there was a great commotion about Christianity. So Christianity is started in, remember, in Jerusalem. And then it kind of bumps its way up into Samaria, Galilee, into that region. And then it begins to spread around the world. So it's taken a while. We're looking at probably 20 years past the day of Pentecost, I would guess, to get to this far, to out into Asia, into the city of Ephesus. And so they've been preaching, and it's not always met with real good results. And here in Ephesus, there's going to be some kickback to it. It says in verse 24, for a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith who made silver shrines of Diana, brought no small profit to the craftsmen. So he brought no small profit. Well, I guess that means he brought a big profit. They were making some money off of the silver shrines of this goddess Diana. I found a couple pictures of them. That's from the Archaeological Museum of Ephesus. And I will say, I just kind of showed her from the chest up, because these statues, old Diana, we'll just say, was not anatomically correct. So if you want to look up a picture of Diana, do it on your phone or on your Google or something. I just gave you a couple images of what these little statues would look like. So this one looks ivory to me, but this one does look silver. So I'm wondering if that's something that Demetrius or one of his fellow craftsmen may have put together back then. You know, people always have little souvenirs. Or they always want something, you know, to remember. I just got back from New Orleans. I was telling Grandma, down in the French Quarter, they have a great big old open-air flea market. And so they have all sorts of stuff, T-shirts and this and that. The thing that caught my eye, I almost bought one. I don't know what I would have done with them, though. They had little alligator heads. I mean, like real live alligators at one time, but now they were very much dead. And they just chopped the head off. And they had some that were about that long. And they had some little bitty ones. I'm thinking, man, you could probably make a keychain or something out of that little alligator head. I don't know what I would have done with the big one. And then I suddenly talked myself out of it and realized how stupid it would be for me to go spend $20 on an alligator head. But everybody wants to have some kind of remembrance or something. And these were even more special to the Ephesians because they were used in worship. And so I think we can even see this in our stores today. A lot of times you can see candles that the Catholics use, the Jesus candles or whatnot. And so that's very important to that particular religion. And so I suppose these silver shrines were very important to the people at Ephesus too. But they were real important to Demetrius. I don't know if Demetrius cared anything in the world about Diana, but Demetrius cared about the money. Remember it said the no small profit? That's what Demetrius cared about. And he was worried about Paul coming in and preaching, hey, you don't need idols. Well, if you don't need idols, they don't need that. And if you don't need that, you don't need Demetrius. And all of a sudden now his business is starting to get taken back a little bit. So Demetrius, it says in verse 25, called them together, the them being the silversmiths. So it's kind of like a union meeting, I suppose, or a crafts guild. He called them together with the workers of similar occupation and said, men, you know that we have our prosperity by this trade. Moreover, you see and hear that not only at Ephesus, but throughout almost all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away many people, saying that they are not gods, which are made with hands. So I might ask you, what has Demetrius said that's wrong? And so far, nothing. Demetrius is 100% on point. He says, we make money. We have our prosperity off of this trade. That was true. He said that not only at Ephesus, but throughout all of Asia. That's true. He also says that Paul has been persuading and turning away many people from idols. That's true. And he said those that are made with hands are not gods. Again, Demetrius is spot on. Same thing that, remember, John was teaching this morning, right? Little children, stay away from idols. Keep yourself from idols. That was the Christian doctrine. That's what was being taught. And he was correct because Ephesus is right in the middle of pretty much everything. It's close to Corinth. It's close to Athens, to Philippi, not too far from Antioch. Jerusalem, you come straight this way. There's another city down there called Alexandria. It is kind of the hub of everything. And so people would go to Ephesus, and he's right. It was pretty much all of Asia was being taught. You don't need to have idols made with hands. And Demetrius is starting to get a little bit concerned because he's losing money. It's as simple as economics 101, supply and demand. And when you have a high supply and you have a low demand because people don't want to buy them anymore, that's not good if you're the guy selling the silver shrines. You're losing money. And so he's not happy about it. And he said, no, we've got to take care of it. So he's getting all of his boys together, all of his silversmiths, to try to stand up against Paul. Verse 27, it says, this is Demetrius. He says, so not only is this trade of ours in danger of falling into disrepute, but also the temple of the great goddess Diana may be despised and her magnificence destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worship. Okay, so this is probably where he made his first mistake. their trade's going to fall into disrepute, yes. The temple of the goddess Diana may be despised, that's true. If enough people turn against Diana, he's probably right. Her magnificence destroyed, I guess that's possible. Whom all Asia and the world worship. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know if Diana's influence spread throughout all the world. But in his mind, he's kind of puffing a little bit. He's telling these, we got to get this taken care of. Okay. So, the Temple of Diana still exists today, or at least parts of it, in ruins. So I kind of got some pictures. You see all these columns? I don't know how many there are now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is what I count. They think back in the day, there were 127 of those columns. The Temple of Diana was considered one of the ancient wonders of the ancient world, if you can imagine. And this is kind of a look at it from the backside of it, all these little obelisks and ruins. It was a magnificent, magnificent structure. And so it was well known throughout the entire world. I don't know if everybody worshipped Diana, but that was well known. So that's the Temple of Diana. Now, let me show you the Temple of Diana from then. This is what people have kind of figured out it looked like. This is a replica that has been built there in Turkey. And there's your 127 columns. And you see that little statue right there in the middle? I'm guessing that's just a life-size version of what we just looked at a minute ago. That's what those little shrines look like. But that is Diana inside of the temple, or Artemis. And here's another rendering of it, kind of with some little color on it, of what it probably looked like back in those days. So the Temple of Diana was a fascinating structure. And it was a big deal. It was a big money deal. And you got to remember, when you start messing with money, a lot of people start getting real antsy. And that hasn't changed between now to then. When you start talking about taking people's money and their livelihood away, you're probably going to get met with some serious resistance. So Acts 19, verse 28 says, "Now when they heard..." Okay, what had they just heard? What had the silversmiths heard? Well, they had heard, number one, we're all going to be losing our money, and we're going to be losing our jobs. And number two, the civic pride of Ephesus is brought into question. Hey, well, this is Diana. This is, we don't want the temple and her magnificence to be despised. We're losing money. We have to do something to stand up against the Apostle Paul and his band of cowardly cohorts that they call the Christians. We have to do something about them because he's going to ruin our economy. He's ruining everything in this area. And it says, when they heard this, they were full of wrath, and they cried out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." So memorize that. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. And they start chanting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And I don't know how many silversmiths there were. I don't know. Ephesus, they say, was probably a city of about 225,000 to 250,000. About the size of Lubbock, maybe Amarillo. I don't know how many silversmiths would have been inside that city. I don't know. But I'm guessing it probably started as kind of a little bit of a murmur, you know, kind of just a low, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And it got a little bit louder. It got a little bit louder. "Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians." You know, the next thing you know, they start pulling some more people in. I'm guessing they're probably outside maybe by this point, maybe starting to walk their way down the street. "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And then it says in verse 29, "So the whole city was filled with confusion." And people start chanting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." They don't know what they're talking about. But it just starts making this mob mentality, and everybody just kind of starts adding to. And they start walking down the road. I'll show you a picture of the street here in a second. And they start chanting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." But the whole town starts joining in. And it says they're filled with confusion. They don't even know why they're there. They don't know what they're mad at. But you see that even today. You can get a whole group of people going in one direction, and half the people don't even know what they're talking about. They're just sheep following the shepherd. And sometimes the shepherd takes them down the wrong path. It says the whole city was filled with confusion and rushed into the theater with one accord, having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions. Okay, so these two guys, Gaius and Aristarchus, are on Paul's side. He says they're Macedonians. That means they're Greeks. They're not Jews that traveled with Paul. They are Macedonians. That's up in the northeast part of Greece. So this is kind of some of their own people in this area. It says Paul wanted to go, but the disciples would not allow him. And then some of the officials of Asia who were his friends sent to him pleading that he would not venture into the theater. So this was a wild scene. Kind of reminiscent almost maybe of the Capitol stuff, the January 6th. I could kind of see some correlation there. For people to start rushing and different things happen and just very chaotic. And you don't really know what's going to happen. Now we've seen riots in our country for the last couple of years. I can kind of see how things would get caught up. I have one in my memory. John might appreciate this. I don't know how much of an Aggie fan he is. But one time Megan and I went to the Alamo Bowl in San Antonio. Texas A&M football was playing Penn State. And we happened to walk in right as the great big Aggie band was making their entrance into the Alamo Dome. And so we just kind of started walking. There was thousands and thousands of Aggies, and I don't know what all the hollers and the whoops and the cheers mean, but they did. And so it was just loud and chaotic, and all these people started walking together. Next thing you know, there's thousands of people walking into the Alamo Dome following the Texas A&M band. Something like that. But it's just a very visual scene. I like this part where it says they seized Gaius and Aristarchus. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that just means they grabbed them and they kind of kept pushing them and making them go with them and walked. I don't know if they went of their own accord. I don't know. I saw a movie one time. It's called A Brother, Where Art Thou? It's kind of a funny little movie if you've ever seen it, but it has a scene in it. Have you ever heard the expression, they got rolled out of town on a rail? And I've heard that expression. Well, in this movie, they did that. I've never seen that before. They're trying to get rid of an old guy, and here come about four people with a big old, long old tree, looks like, a big old limb, rushing into the building. They take the old boy, and they throw him over the top of it, and they tie his hands together, and they literally run him out of town on a rail. I don't know if that's what it really looked like or not, but it's very visual. I don't know if they did this to Gaius or Aristarchus. I don't know. But somehow now these two companions of Paul, these two Greek fellows, have gotten caught up in it, and they've all gotten rushed down the road that's still there. I don't understand that. I don't know how they could have built that road 2,000 years ago and it's still there, and every 2 years we have to redo Bell Street. I still haven't figured that out. But that road is still there. That's the road that leads from the Temple of Diana all the way to what's called the Theater. It's the main road in Ephesus. It's the Curates, or however you say that. I've also heard it called the Arc of Diane. And so this is that main road. And so imagine these swarms of people led by the silversmiths chanting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians! Great is Diana of the Ephesians! Great is Diana of the Ephesians!" They grab Paul's fellows. And now all of a sudden, I don't know if it started with 20 people or 50 people or 100 or 1,000. I don't know. But now there's this huge mob scene carrying them out on a rail, possibly, I don't know, chanting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians," and they take them down the road until they get to the theater. And that's what's left of the theater. This theater is impressive, magnificent. It is some 500-foot wide diameter at its width. That's over a football field and a half. This is a big, big theater. And so it's built up like an amphitheater, up into the mountains, up to the hills right there. I don't know if you know that about amphitheaters. They're pretty smart. They had it figured out where the acoustics, where you could be standing on the stage and you could hear it anywhere in that theater. And they start chanting, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And I want you to imagine how unbelievably loud that must have been. Scholars estimate that you could probably see 20,000 people in that theater, maybe 25,000 with standing room. Think about that. Think about how loud that is if that theater got filled. A couple years ago, I guess it was the last time that the Bobcats had a good football team and Permian had a good football team. And it's been a while. It was probably, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. I went to the Bobcat-Permian football game. St. Angelo Stadium seats 17,500. And I'm guessing with the standing room, there was at least 20,000 people at that football game. It was packed, and it was loud, and both sides hollering back and forth. I'm guessing that's probably what it was like there. I've also been to some games at Texas Tech. I like going to their field. They have a deal, and it's really neat. When you get all 60,000 people in that stadium, half of the stadium will yell "Raider," and then the other half will answer with "Power." That's their Raider power chant. And so they'll start going, "Raider, power, Raider, power." And it just goes back and forth. And that stadium just rocks with how loud it is. And I think about this. "Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And I don't know exactly how they chanted it. But they start chanting this inside of an amphitheater that is known for acoustics to be super loud. And they've rushed thousands and thousands of people into this theater. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine being up on this part of the stage and this theater is just completely packed in, and there's kind of another view of it that shows it's like an upper deck. That was fascinating to me. And so they begin to chant, and they begin to cheer, and they begin to holler. Funny thing is, a bunch of them didn't even know what they were hollering. It says in verse 32, "Some therefore cried one thing, and some another. For the assembly was confused, and most of them did not know why they had come together. They didn't know why they were there, but it seemed like the thing to do at the time. And everybody's kind of paused into the theater. It says, verse 33, and they drew Alexander out of the multitude, the Jews putting him forward. But who's Alexander? Well, Alexander is a Jew. And apparently Alexander gets kind of voluntold by the other Jews to be the spokesman. So Alexander is going to be the spokesman for the Jews. It says, and Alexander motioned with his hand, he's trying to get quiet, motioned with his hand and wanted to make his defense to the people. But when they found out that he was a Jew, all with one voice cried out for about 2 hours, great is Diana of the Ephesians. So let's think about Alexander. What did the Jews want Alexander to say? And he's trying to quiet down the crowd. I suppose Alexander's job was to try to convince the Ephesians that Paul had nothing to do with the Jews. Oh, yeah. Hey, Paul is not a Jew. I just want you to know this. Paul is not a Jew. He's a Christian. Whatever he does is on him. But Alexander never got the chance because he's sitting there trying to quiet them down, and the crowd will not listen. And it says, for 2 hours, great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great. So right now, it's 3:17. Take your phone out and hit timer and put 2 hour timer and just hit it. And when it rings here in 2 hours when you're sitting at home doing something else, I want you to remember for that 2 hour time period is how long these Ephesians chanted with one voice, great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Just on and on and on and on and on. And on and on. Just imagine what it must have been like. It sounded like. What a crazy time. Finally, verse 35, says the city clerk. I don't know who he was. Somebody in the city of Ephesus, downtown, worked in the admin building of the city, I suppose. Says the city clerk had quieted the crowd. He said, men of Ephesus, what man is there who does not know that the city of the Ephesians is the temple guardian of the great goddess Diana, and the image which fell down from Zeus? Therefore, since these things cannot be denied, you ought to be quiet and do nothing rashly. For you have brought these men here who are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers of your goddess. Therefore, if Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a case against anyone, the courts are open and there are proconsuls. Let them bring charges against one another. But if you have any other inquiry to make, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. For we are in danger of being called in question today for today's uproar. There being no reason which we may give to account for this disorderly gathering. And when he had said these things, he dismissed his son. And so finally, somebody with a little common sense from the city, of all people, probably the planning department or something, came up and had enough knowledge and enough common sense to say, we've got to stop this. He says, these people have done nothing wrong. They haven't desecrated the temple. They haven't robbed the temple. They haven't done anything. If Demetrius has a problem, then Demetrius can take him to court. Because that's how we do things in this civilized society in which we live in here in the city of Ephesus. He says there's avenues to take care of things in a legal setting. Because right now, we're not in a legal setting. And so they're kind of worried about the Romans too. Remember, they're under Roman control. And they can get themselves in trouble with the Romans for having this massive mob rally for no reason. So there's got to be some lesson. Because, I mean, that is just the most visual scene I think you can imagine. The greatest Diana of the Ephesians chant for 2 hours. A couple things I want you to know before we close. Number one, I think it's important. We always need to determine the motivation of a potential leader. And I think about this from a religious standpoint. And I think about how some churches have just gotten so huge. And the first thing they typically do is they take off any denominational name. You don't want the name Baptist anymore. You don't want the name Methodist. You don't want the name Church of Christ, certainly. If you do put a name on it, you'll put the name Community Church. Because that kind of covers all your bases. And these churches are growing. They're getting stronger. And a lot of times they're led by very well-spoken, smart people. I think about the guy down in Houston, that Holstein guy. I mean, they are charismatic. And they know how to get people into the building and how to get money from them too. Determine the motivation of a potential leader. Well, Demetrius, he was right in a lot of things. He was correct. But you've got to consider his motivation. His motivation was not about doing right for God. His motivation was about making him and his buddies money and making sure that pipeline of money continued. Always determine the motivation of a potential leader. And he might put in parentheses there, preacher. Because that's, we've got to be careful of that. Number two, always remember the ignorance of the mob mentality. Just because a whole bunch of people are in unison and in agreement, and you may be outnumbered thousands and thousands to two, or thousands and thousands to five, or 20, or whatever it may be, that doesn't mean the big group is right. Remember, there was a mob mentality that got Jesus crucified. And there was people from Jerusalem who had no idea what was going on. They didn't know. They were just there on vacation, so to speak. They were there for the Passover. They didn't know who Jesus was. And they certainly didn't know who Barabbas was, this murderous man who had led a rebellion, open rebellion. They didn't probably know who they were. But by the end of the day, how many of those ignorant people were chanting for Barabbas to be released and for Jesus to be crucified, even though they had no idea what was going on? They had no knowledge. Unfortunately, it's said that the people who speak the loudest are usually the people with the least amount of knowledge. And that is played out time and time again, even today. Remember the ignorance of the mob mentality. Don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up in how big this church is compared to our group over here. If might makes right. No, it's not the way it works in the South world. Don't get caught up in mob mentality. And I think that's good advice just across the board. Don't get caught up in seeing what everybody else is doing. If everybody else is doing something, probably it's not going to stay away from it, or at least be cautious of it. And number three, I want you to remember and appreciate the faithfulness of Paul and his companions. Remember Gaius and Aristarchus, these two Macedonians who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they get grabbed into the crowd and thrown down, I'm guessing, into that front part of that theater, where thousands and thousands of people are hollering and screaming at them, probably throwing stuff at them if they had it, chanting greatest dying of the Ephesians over and over and over and over and over and over for 2 hours. You know what I'd probably done? I probably would have said, Paul. I hate to say that, but I would have probably said, Paul, I think I'm done with this. I don't want to go with you anymore. I don't think I want to do this anymore. This is rough. This isn't what I signed up for. But I want you to notice, this is our last verse, Acts 21. This is the next verse. It says that after the uproar had ceased, Paul called the disciples to himself, embraced them, and departed to go to Macedonia. So Paul's like, all right, here we go. Next. And he just kept on. It didn't matter about the threatenings. It didn't matter about the great riot and the great mob. None of that mattered. Paul called his disciples together and said, hey, let's go to Macedonia. And they took off and kept on preaching in Macedonia. Don't ever forget to appreciate the faithfulness of Paul and his companions. Because it would have been so easy to quit. Most people would quit. Probably myself included, I would quit. Not Paul. That Paul gathered his disciples together, and they kept on, and they went on, and back to Macedonia they go, and I bet Gaius and Aristarchus were the happiest people to be heading back to their homeland and get away from these crazy Ephesians. And that is the story of greatest Diana and the great mob scene at the city of Ephesus that Paul referenced this morning. I thought it was a good way to tie it together. Never like to close out having a song of invitation. We can help you in any way. And the church stands ready to assist you at this time.